Beth Michael from the University of California, Berkeley, and there are some handouts going on. He's currently working on Iquito, Peruvian Amazonian language. He's going to talk about some of the team-based language documentation work that he's been doing.
All right. Thank you very much for coming this morning. The title of the talk has slightly changed. It's now Developing Infrastructure for Team-Based Language Documentation and Description, the Module and Seminar Model. And the goal of this talk is to basically motivate, describe, and evaluate the framework for team-based language documentation and description that we developed in the context of the Iquito Language Documentation Project. Now, we can take as a starting point the observation that team-based language documentation and description confers significant advantages over the traditional one-language, one-linguist model. I imagine that in many respects I'm sort of preaching to the choir here in that respect. But it also poses significant challenges for the integration and coordination of research activities, and I'll have something more to say about that in just a second. In the ILDP, what we sought to do was retain the advantages of team-based language documentation and description, while at the same time mitigating the difficulties it poses for the coordination and integration of research activities. Now, the concrete infrastructure that we developed for doing so, we call the module and seminar model, and this consisted of the following components. The delimitation of a large set of relatively short research topics, the modules, the assignment of modules to individual researchers in accord with a module schedule prepared at the beginning of each field season, the presentation of each module at a daily seminar, the inclusion of the modules in a bound volume at the end of each field season, and then two coordinators who are responsible for coordinating research activities in the group. There's a handout, and there should be copies for you recent arrivals. So basically, the explication of this model will be the focus of my talk. But before I jump into that, I want to give you a little bit of background information on the ILDP. So the ILDP is a multi-year team-based project to document and describe Iquito, a highly endangered Saparoan language of Peruvian Amazonia. And apart from the sort of standard documentary and descriptive goals for a project like this, the project also sought to develop first strategies for incorporating community members into language documentation and description in active research roles. And Christine Byers' talk, for those of you who were there yesterday, described important aspects of that. And the second sort of infrastructural goal we had was to develop frameworks to facilitate team-based linguistic fieldwork, and that's the topic of this talk. The principal fieldwork for this project was carried out between 2002 and 2006, with short supplementary fieldwork trips and write-up of materials currently ongoing, so sort of the standard triad of dictionary, text, collection, and grammar. Now, depending on the year, the particular year of the project, the team consisted of, four to seven visiting linguists who are graduate students from UT Austin, or licenciatura students from the Universidad Nacional Mayor de San Marcos in Lima, Peru. And over the course of the project, a total of 12 students participated in the project, many for two or more years. Another important component of the research team were two to three community linguists who were community members trained in various aspects of documentary and descriptive linguistics. The fieldwork by the community linguists was ongoing year-round, while the visiting linguists visit the community for 2 months each year, basically during the North American academic summer. So that's, when I talk about the field season, I'm referring to that summer period. We were funded by various people, and if you're interested, you can look at it right now. Now, what I'd like to do is talk about the advantages of team-based language documentation very briefly. Most of these, I think, are fairly obvious, but I think they're worth saying. So first, by providing social, intellectual, and material infrastructure for student researchers, the entry of these researchers into the field is facilitated, and their chances of success, for example, actually getting data and finishing various theses and whatnot, is significantly enhanced. And this is especially true in a rustic and geographically remote fieldwork situation like that of the Amazon Basin. Perhaps even more importantly, Team-based work like this creates, sort of automatically creates a scholarly community around a language, increasing the richness and quality of the resulting work. This is, I think, can be especially important in the cases of underdocumented languages and language families, where there might not be any other linguists working even in the language family, let alone on that specific language, and so you sort of suffer from a dearth of colleagues, potentially. As part of this, team-based documentation and description permits greater specialization by individual linguists, and hence greater depth in description and analysis. Such an approach also significantly increases the amount of work that can be carried out on a language in a given field season, simply by increasing the total number of people working on the language. And another, perhaps less obvious advantage, is that with the right infrastructure, a model like this permits relatively short-term researcher involvement and commitment to a given project. And so that a given researcher can join the project for, say, one field season and still contribute productively to the work of the project. And this, of course, has a number of advantages, not the least of which is that it makes it more attractive for potential field workers. You could imagine that some students may be happy to spend one summer in the Amazon Basin, but not five consecutive ones. Okay, so now let's talk about the various challenges and problems posed by team-based fieldwork. Now, the way I think about the sort of the unifying factor behind these issues is that language documentation description is intrinsically a holistic activity, requiring a great deal of integration and coordination amongst the different facets of the activity. Team-based research, however, disrupts the de facto integration and coordination amongst the different facets of a research project that sort of automatically obtains if you have only a single researcher, right? It's all integrated and coordinated in a single person's head. Once you split that up into a number of different people, then these coordination problems and integration problems arise. And I'll say that we directly, these aren't just theoretical problems, we actually quite actively and concretely experienced this during the first season of our fieldwork in 2002. And it was those experiences that led us to develop this model that I'll be discussing shortly. Moving more concretely into some of the issues we face. So there's a lateral integration problem. So that when you have multiple researchers, there's the possibility that there'll be a great deal of redundant research as multiple researchers carry out similar work to resolve unknowingly shared analytical and empirical issues. One side of this is that researchers will be ignorant of the results produced by other researchers that are relevant to their own work. There's a longitudinal integration problem also. Because of the long gaps between fieldwork periods and the fact that new researchers were joining the team each year, new researchers are faced with the fact that they aren't necessarily going to be aware of the results of previous year's work. And even researchers who continue from year to year are in this position of losing unreported information, these kinds of half-baked analyses that float around in our heads between fieldwork seasons. When you have 9 months between fieldwork, you lose a lot in that way. There are lateral and longitudinal coordination problems, basically having to do with the fact that when you're choosing topics with multiple researchers, you could have inadvertent overlap, or even worse, gaps. This gapping problem, I think, is exacerbated in team-based situations because the social dynamics of groups favor the shirking of unpleasant tasks. So, you know, no one really likes the adjectives in this language, and so everyone's sort of pretending that someone else will work on it. Okay. So the model that I'm about to discuss is intended to deal with some of these issues. So starting in 2003, we implemented the following one, and the core components are, first, a set of weekly topics, research topics, that were assigned to each researcher upon which they wrote reports, the so-called modules. Another component was a two-hour seminar at the end of each workday, at which one module was presented by the researcher to which it was assigned to the entire team for discussion. The topics were assigned to the researchers on the base of a master module schedule prepared by the project coordinators, who also consulted with the researchers as they worked on their modules. The final version of each module was included in a summary volume with the texts and pedagogical materials produced each year, plus the latest version of the dictionary. So basically, this framework addressed the integration and coordination issues described above by providing a regular venue for the sharing of analyses so that the team as a whole could contribute to the research topics of individuals and also be apprised of individual advances. It also created an immediate written record for reference during that field season and via the summary volume for reference by researchers in subsequent years. And via the schedule module schedule, it assured even coverage or relatively even coverage of research topics whilst avoiding overlaps. So now I'd like to sort of talk about the various subcomponents that I sort of just briefly mentioned. So in the ILP, there were two project coordinators, each with different domains of responsibility. One devoted to text and pedagogical materials, that was Christine Beyer, and one devoted to dictionary and grammatical description, that was me. And the two project coordinators remained the same over the course of the project, despite significant changes in the constitution of the remainder of the team, which meant that the coordinators, in essence, provided an important institutional memory for the project, significantly ameliorating some of the longitudinal issues I've discussed. The grammatical coordinator, grammatical description coordinator, regularly consulted with the researchers as they wrote their modules, which also led to a degree of coordination. And I want to point out, and I think this is a very important point, that both of the coordinators were graduate students at the time, and that their efficacy was not tied to their greater expertise or knowledge or skill, but simply their longer-term participation in the project. It was the fact that we sort of constituted a certain kind of thread of continuity that was important. Another component was the module schedule. And basically, at the beginning of each field season, the grammatical description coordinator developed a module schedule in conjunction with the other coordinator and the individual researchers, with efforts made to balance the needs of the project with individual interests and skills of the researchers. The schedule typically included 5 to 6 weeks of modules, 1 to 2 weeks of text work, which were typically front-loaded at the beginning of each field season as a sort of baptism of fire to get people really quickly up to speed on the language, and then 1 week of work on pedagogical materials. This is per researcher. Modules were normally assigned to individual researchers for a one-week period who presented their results at the end of the period during the daily seminar. And the seminar dates were staggered, fashion, so that every day a module came due, so there was a new module at the end of each day presented at the seminar. Now, page 7 of this handout includes a table of contents for the summary volume for the modules of 2004. So that'll give you sort of the an idea of the scope and range of the module topics in one given field season. And pages 8 and 9 are the first 4 pages of a module from that year. I think the entire module was 13 pages, and I've just given you the first 4 pages to give you a flavor of what these modules were like. I believe this one is on diminutives. The most important component were the seminars. So this is where people presented their modules. The seminars began at 4 p.m. each day and lasted until about 6, which is when the mosquitoes made it intolerable. I had to dash for the mosquito nets. And at the seminars, the researchers provided printed drafts of the module and presented it orally. And the vigorous discussion ensued typically. And then following the seminar, the descriptive grammar coordinator and the researcher met to discuss final amendments, which were incorporated and then included in the summary volume. So to give you perhaps a more concrete sense of how this works, I sort of want to describe for you the life cycle of a module. So on day one, the researcher begins on the new topic and begins with a combination of elicitation and data harvesting. It sort of depends on what the topic is and what the appropriate data type is, with relatively little analysis. And this is sort of the way it works in the first like 1 to 4 days, so a lot of data harvesting. And then on day 5 to 6, it shifts increasingly to analysis and write-up. Day 7 consists typically of frantic write-up with a little bit of analysis and last-minute data collection. And then at 4 p.m., the module was printed. I remember many a day standing over the researcher demanding that they print the module. And the module got printed and they presented it. And then on day 8, which is also day 1, the researcher was typically incorporating those final changes and starting up on the new topic. It was very intense work for those 2 months. So now what I'd basically like to talk about are the weaknesses and strengths of this model. So one weakness is that the model depends a great deal on the continuity of the project's coordinators. This allows for relative flexibility in the year-to-year constitution of the team, but it does mean that you have to find project coordinators that are willing to participate for the duration of the project. We found that basically the model worked well with a 2-to-1 ratio of non-coordinators to coordinators. Above that limit, the ability for the coordinators to actually participate actively in the research began to diminish. To which the degree to which that's a disadvantage depends on how much the coordinators want to be involved. We want to be involved a great deal, so between Chris and me, another 4 researchers for a total team size of 6 worked well, but above that it began to be a little problematic. Obviously, this methodology requires quite a bit of material and human infrastructure, so you need to be able to print the modules, which means computers, printers, electricity, space in which to meet, and you also need sufficient access to consultants. We averaged on something like 28 consultant hours per day. So that means you need to have people who are available and interested in working for that amount of time per day. And another sort of disadvantage was that as the project progressed and the analyses got increasingly detailed and sophisticated, it became more difficult for new team members to get up to speed and contribute. On the successes side, I would say that we basically solved most of the basic coordination and integration issues that we experienced in 2002, so that was very satisfying. The model also worked as a framework in which to bring students into the field for a single field season and have them contribute effectively. The model was also nice because it resulted in the continuous incremental production of documentation and description rather than sort of nothing for a long time and then a big lump. It was also productive in the sense that it stimulated a great deal of student writings. 3 theses de licenciatura by the Peruvian students, I'm almost done. 5 MA theses at the University of Texas and 2 dissertations. One person will be defending in a month and another person is well on her way to getting her dissertation written. And it was also very successful in bringing students into Amazonian fieldwork. Amazonia is sort of intriguing to many people, but intimidating to others. And most of the people who ended up participating said they would have never come to the Amazon basin without the kind of infrastructure we provided. Because of the general descriptive base the project provided, the theses and dissertations that have been and are being written are quite detailed and deep. And focusing on fairly narrow areas of the language. I'll let you read about those for reasons of time. Another thing that I personally found very gratifying is that this model has been very successful in creating a community of active Aikido researchers. There are 4 of us presently working on a paper, and we're working together on the full descriptive grammar of the language, and it's really nice not to be working alone. And finally, I don't know if this really counts as a success because it hasn't been done yet, I have the strong feeling, and I believe Chris does as well, is that the module, as developed, shows signs of being transposable to other contexts. And so hopefully this model is of greater applicability. Thank you.
We have about 8 minutes for questions. I just want to say thank you. That was a really very practical conversation. It's wonderful.
My name is Ulrike Mosel. I'm from the DOBIS program, and I work on in Papua New Guinea. And I have the feeling that you work with a very special community. This model would not be transferable to Papua New Guinea, because our native or indigenous team members, they decide on the schedule. And I have to adjust, you know, to their speed of working. And so they set the agenda, what we are doing and how we are doing it, and at what time we are doing it, and what kind of speed we are doing it. So, and I would not be able to come into the village with, let's say, more than two people. Yeah, it would be very difficult to feed a team like this, and it would mean like an invasion, you know, of linguists. And I wonder how a little community can cope with such a big team of linguists and changing, you know, changing personnel or changing staff.
Right,
I think it's impossible in
well,
the area where I work. It may be possible in Amazonia.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's another community in which Chris and I work where we would never imagine trying this kind of model. The community in which we're working, right, is a community in which the language is highly endangered. So it's a community in which there's a great deal of mestizaje, right? So this is a community where most people are now native Spanish speakers. Most speakers have rejected indigenous identity and have, and as part of that package, are highly interested in the outside world. There are DVD players in the community and so on and so forth. So I fully agree that this model could not be applied to all, or could not be implemented in all communities. I'm not sure if there's any model that is. Yes?
I don't know how to say this, but this is a model that is strongly Western based on a model of doing research that serves the purposes of a Western institution to graduate Western students. And though you mentioned the work of Christine, I don't see integrated into the model anything that leaves space or a door for the community to come in and decide what they want to do, what they don't want to do, how they want to do it, and so on. Even you use words like harvesting, which is one of the things that communities have accused us of doing for many years. You come, you take, you don't leave anything. And so after the panel that has happened in this same room right before, and I don't know how many of you have been here, this kind of model stands in stark contrast things that we've been being told and the ways that we might want to actually take the input of the community in deciding how to do things, when, with whom, and so on.
Right. Well, I mean, the interesting thing is I don't think that the two things are at odds. So the community research participants were chosen by the community. And the community set a number of very concrete products that they wanted, right? They wanted a dictionary. They wanted pedagogical materials. And they wanted a text collection. Not necessarily in those terms, but they wanted, you know, a record of their oral history and so on and so forth. And all these activities fed directly into those products that they specified. So I don't think that, I don't know, it seems to me that there are models that take advantage of what one might call, that are organized along Western lines for reasons of productivity, but nevertheless serve the needs of the community. I don't think it's the case that in order to serve the needs of the community, one needs to necessarily reject models that have proved or arise from Western ideas about efficiency. I don't think that they're necessarily at odds, which, I don't know, it seems to be what you're suggesting.
I don't know.
I think you told me, maybe I'm misremembering, but I think you also told me what's that, that the community approached you and invited you and asked you to come. Mm-hmm. So this wasn't a researcher-initiated project.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was just going to say that makes a huge difference. And well, I don't know if others did, but I wasn't very clear exactly on that part of it, how the community approached you, and also that the part of your team are really coming from the community, so they're trained first. I mean, there are other models out there that I think maybe are come close to this, and one is that isn't addressed here, and that is how teams get built within the community that might work with teams who are coming from outside of the community. I think that's yet another kind of team model that needs to be addressed at some point in time. It's a little bit different than what you're suggesting, so that
right.
you factor in exactly what you're saying. So the community is guiding the nature of not only what they want, but how that is accomplished within the community setting. So I don't know. I would say that in some of the communities I work in, this might work really well as long as it was by the invitation of the community.
Sure, sure.
And in other places, I can see that it would be a struggle unless it was guided by a team effort coming within the community. And so there are all these different models that we probably need to consider and look at. I think it looks really productive and really interesting. And as long as there's community control over the materials in the end.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So apparently we need to wrap up.
Sorry.
So what I'd like to say is that yes, I mean, a number of these issues that I raise are sort of been cut out of this talk because there was a division of labor between my talk and Chris's talk.
Oh.
We did have year long teams involving only community members working in the project. So For most of the project, between two community linguists and the four language specialists. And they worked year-round. And so there was direct input and interaction in that dimension. And during the summers, sort of these two components of the community sort of intermeshed. We did take community participation seriously in a very concrete way by involving these community researchers in the project. And they got to choose basically the kinds of products that they worked on. I don't see that a rigorous research program and community participation are in any way incompatible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think our time is actually up for this one, but I'm sure you'll make yourself available
yes.
Out in the hall.
I'm Chris of the project, and
okay.
I just wanted to say that this is one facet of many, many facets of our relationship with the Iquitos community. So I've had 20 minutes to talk about something. But it's certainly not all we did and the only way we did it. This is one of many, many facets. And so I think that's an important thing to say at the end, that this is only one thing we did and one way we did it, but it was by far not the only thing. It was certainly not the primary.
Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm
a bit
You stay here. I'll get some.
They might be in the computer.
Thank you. Maybe I'll show you how to because I've got to lock it.
The computer doesn't have an extra.
It doesn't have a.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, I live in Berkeley.
Yeah.
Right. Has one for the monitor.
Just a note, the acoustics in this room are pretty bad.
Not too
so.
Bad. Yeah.
Shout out us.
Yeah. I might have to copy it onto your website just to
okay,
say it's for the excess issues.
Yeah, like as soon as you've got
did
graduated.
Did
the
yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Is that Ewan's
Oh, that's good. You're
friends.
We're having a problem here.